Welcome to episode 4 of The Main Line and Beyond with Mark Singer. Tonight's guest is none other than reggae keyboardist extraordinaire Adam Flicker of Steal Your Peach, San Noche Reggae Band, and some others. We discuss some pretty cool stuff like music, the Eagles' recent victory of the NFC Conference Championship, the mental health benefits of music, the roots of American music, and a whole lot more. I hope you enjoy the show. All right. Welcome to episode 4 of The Main Line and Beyond with Mark Singer. Very excited to be here tonight. It's nice, mild weather we have here in Ardmore out here at Daydream Creative Studios. And I got one of my good friends and bandmates here tonight to, talk stuff, music, Mr. Adam Flicker.
Yep, I was able to carve out some time in my busy schedule to hang out with you.
The stars align. We had Tony Flagiello scheduled for tonight, for those that may have tuned in for him, but, you know, he was feeling a bit under the weather. We spoke on the phone. His voice was rough, so that's not going to work on a podcast. So everything worked out, and here we are with Adam. Going to get right to it, but just always like to kind of touch base on some things that have happened in the last week or so.
Why was Tony's voice rough, do you think?
I think that Tony had come down with a little bug, Adam. It's going around.
Oh, the football bug?
Eagles fever there? No, I don't know. I mean, who we got? The Eagles took the NFC last night. City is in a frenzy. They're lubricating poles out there.
Yeah, but that doesn't work. I mean, people get it.
No, apparently not. I saw some footage that proved.
People get up there without, despite the grease.
I mean, I have to say, I was a huge sports addict as a kid all through my teenage years. Anymore, it's entertainment, but I just don't get too emotionally invested. But I'm happy for the city, you know. And the Eagles and Philadelphia sports teams have mostly suffered over my lifetime. So it's good to see them have probably the best team I've ever seen them have. You know what I mean, Adam?
No, I don't know what you mean, but I will echo your sentiment that it's nice that nice things are happening for the city and that people aren't walking around bummed out because a sports team that they have no control of lost a game because they won. So, you know, that's good stuff.
Absolutely.
It's like the opposite of the evil pink slime in Ghostbusters 2. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have to embrace stuff like that for sure. So I watched a bit, you know. Lila, my daughter, she's getting into it a little bit. You know, I think she got bored. Which
does
is
she
fine.
Have a jersey? Does she
no,
have
a, no.
All right. You know, not yet.
When I was a teenager, I'm like, you know, when I have kids, I'm definitely going to do that. But I just didn't go that route, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, jersey's coming right around the corner.
And I mean, those that know me know I've always been a Steelers fan, which is something hard to explain. But I have also been an Eagles fan. I'm very happy for Philly and the Eagles. On a side note, you know, we have a lot of different things going on, some of which I'd like to kind of touch on, but I'm not sure if I want to go there at the moment with some darker current events that are pretty disturbing. But in terms of music, we'll keep it in that realm. Steal Your Peach has a big show Friday.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. Brooklyn Bowl in Philadelphia, fun venue.
Yeah, Brooklyn Bowl is actually a proven brand. You know, they originated in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever knew that. And yeah, it actually, the venue in Philly kind of like has that same vibe as the one in Brooklyn. So they're keeping it consistent.
Yeah, and being that it's in Philly, makes it closer.
Yeah, way closer, less tolls.
It was an armory, I was told.
Man, I don't know.
They're arming something. Something else these days.
They got military bases all over.
But no, in all seriousness, it is a great venue. And different people have their different opinions about Live Nation and things like that. I'm not going to lie. But I will say, and I think you will agree, they make musicians feel very well treated there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, man. They know how to treat people at Brooklyn Bowl. It's great.
Yeah, they want to make sure the musicians are treated well.
Staff is nice. Sully, the security guard, is very gentle in his examination of you before you enter the venue. Don't bring any weapons to the show.
No weapons for sure.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, even though it was an armory at one time. So yeah, that's Friday, February 3rd, and we are excited. It was going to be, you know, they do like an early show and a late show. We were going to do the early show. Now we have both slots. The other band, apparently, I don't know the story there, but spread the word. We'd love to see familiar faces. Anyone that likes the band, get the word out.
It's going to be a doozy. Oh, we have a guest vocalist
Yes,
also. Let us
Chelsea
not forget her.
Viacara. And yes.
Chelsea, you know, and to use the jargon of Wayne's World, she wails. You know, she can sing any genre, but she does great with the Grateful Dead. I used to sub in a funk band that she was in, Swift Technique, and she was great at that. And I didn't even know that she could sing Grateful Dead stuff. And then she sat in with us. And then also, I play in a reggae band, and she sits in sometimes with this reggae band, and she sings great in that too. So she's great in all the genres.
Which reggae band is that?
Ear Me Now.
Oh, I didn't know she sung in that. Okay.
Every now and then she'll sing in Ear Me Now.
She is versatile for
Oh.
sure. Yes, and I do appreciate that. She's soulful, and she understands where the music came from, which is, you know, to me, where it's at. You know, all the way back to the earliest soul singers, sounds like to me. So that's Brooklyn Bowl Friday night in Philadelphia.
What time
Everyone
does that
is out.
start?
We will hit the stage at 8. The doors open at 7.
Wow.
You know, we're not playing a whole lot of shows these days, so it's few and far between. And you know, you don't really get into Brooklyn Bowl that often anyway. So after that, we will have March 17th, which is St. Paddy's Day, at the Ardmore Music Hall with Ron Holloway, which is really amazing to have that opportunity.
Well,
Anytime.
we love Ron. Ron's the best.
Ron is not only the best, but he is such a down-to-earth, modest person of such high caliber, and one of the funnier people I've met too.
He's got some stories, man. He's got some doozies of
Yeah,
stories.
he does. Root Boy Slim in the 80s was something. I need to have him on this show, because Ron just he cracks me up with some of his stories about filling bowls of dog food was one of his responsibilities. I don't know what was going on back then in the DC area. But anyway.
That's that go-go music. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I thought people were losing their appetites, not eating dog food, man. But anyway, that's coming up on the 17th, right next door at the Ardmore Music Hall with Ron, and we're doing a special show that night to commemorate 50 years of the Watkins Glen Summer Jam, which, as everyone knows, was even larger attendance than Woodstock, with the band, the Grateful Dead, and the Allman Brothers. So we'll be kind of fusing all three bands in for the sets that night. Groovy.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good times.
So yeah, it most definitely. And Ardmore is Ardmore's like our home base. I mean, not I live here, but I have ties to where the club kind of came from, the Blockley. For those that don't know, the Blockley was at 38th and Chestnut, and really, in my opinion, kind of opened the first chapter for the jam band music in Philadelphia. You know, outside, like I had seen Splintered Sunlight quite a few times and loved their shows, but the Blockley. And you know, knew Chris Perrella so early on when he was just getting things going. It's kind of crazy to think back on. You know, it's such a wide variety of different bands that were coming into the city and went from, you know, light crowds to packed houses. And then the plug got pulled just suddenly. And it's like whoa, you know, and it's like the place was just killing it, just building momentum, and then boom. And some politics, University of Penn. I'm not really sure all the details, but it was a bummer, and then they kind of just relocated that venue right next door to what was Brownie's 23 East. You know, because this show is for, you know, a lot of people out there listening or might be well aware, and some might not be, you know.
Yeah, and lo and behold, people are willing to come to Ardmore. It's
Yeah,
awesome.
Ardmore is like, it's almost like an extension of the city anymore. What I like about, you know, it is a very, you know, quite a few things, but the walkability in a neighborhood that's still pretty, you know, safe and diverse is awesome, you know, with kids, and so that's what's cool about it. So yeah, I mean, that's about it as far as, you know, our music and coming up, the Brooklyn Bowl on the February 3rd, and then Ardmore Music Hall, St. Patty's Day, March 17th with Ron Holloway. before we move on with Adam, you know, the show is, you know, so I'm always going to do a little brief spiel, if you will, because the show is being brought to you by my business, which is ilovemarksinger.com. I am a realtor. I take it seriously. I have two kids, and I love playing music. However, it's not all that I do, and it's something that I'm growing passion for. And why that is a variety of reasons. I have so many friends out there that I know, because I've been in the same boat, are struggling financially and trying to get ahead. And what I've learned in the short time I've been doing this is the best way to do it. And what I've also learned is there's a lot of ways to make it happen that you may not be aware of. And what I mean by that is, like, money down. That can be scary and intimidating. And I know there's a lot of people that may have questions, but there are situations where you can buy homes with very little money down. So I'm speaking to you folks out there. I'm speaking to anyone out there, because I will be no one will work harder, and I will take it seriously, and I'll be honored to have the opportunity to work with you to buy or sell a house. You know, it's something that I've done with bandmates and friends, and it's something that means a lot to me to be entrusted with that. And also, I just really would love to see and have the opportunity to help friends get ahead, buy it, stop renting. If you have an opportunity to not rent and get someone else wealthy, find a way to own so you can build your own wealth and have some security for your future. So I just want to say that since the last show, I've seen a couple situations where people have bought houses with almost no money out of pocket. I mean, I'm talking like $1,500 to $2,000. You know, those situations exist. So it's serious. And I think that, you know, the situation out there is not going to get any prettier for folks in terms of being able to own a home and just to be able to get ahead financially in our country. So I'm speaking to you, and I mean it. And I hope you give me that opportunity. If you want to sell a home, the spring market's coming soon. There's different strategies to get your home ready to be sold so that when it's time to list it, it's good to go and you can get as much as possible. And that's it on that. Back to Adam here.
That's not my area of expertise.
No. No. But you like homes.
No. Oh, yeah. Buildings in general. I'm a big fan of buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you like to live in them?
Mainly, yeah. I prefer to live in buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like, if I'm not going to live in a building, I'm going to Hawaii, man.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't understand these people not living in buildings in Philadelphia.
I feel like if the conditions are right, maybe a cave. But there's not a lot to be done in the, like, real estate with caves. Really? Right? There's, like, not right. Have you ever listed a cave?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, that question answered.
Yeah. No, if you want to go that route, I recommend it, you know, for anyone that wants to take a stab, so to speak.
Sure. I mean, you know. It's very highly insulated. It's good natural insulation if you start living in the earth.
No, and there's the decompression of just being separated from this world that we're in, you know, that's going by a million miles an hour outside that window right there that's probably being picked up on this microphone.
Good luck to us.
Which, yeah. you know, so I have some generic questions prepared, Adam, and, you know, they revolve around how we met.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember.
I remember how we met.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. My long-term memory is completely intact. So we met at like a party. I think it was like at Raph's old place in Havertown. You know, we had like in that apartment that was upstairs.
Okay, yeah, that was.
Or somebody's party. I think it
great
was there.
Special place. I spent a lot of fun times. Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember the year, but it was a while ago now. You know, definitely over 10 years ago, I would say.
Yes.
I am positive of that.
It was like a Cuddy's open mic that then went to the after party at Raph's. Yeah.
Yeah, and you just you introduced yourself and you laid out the concept of Steal Your Peach. I guess it was pretty much right as you were transitioning from Old Soul Revival to Steal Your Peach. And you told me all about it. And then I started playing with you a little bit.
Yeah, which a lot of people may know or not know or even not care. But I had the band Old Soul Revival, which was more focused on original music, but still, did some covers because I just think that's the way to do it. And then we were doing through Old Soul some tributes here and there, and they were a lot of fun, and people were really receptive. And then we got opportunities to do them outside of Philadelphia, and I'm like, well, if we're going to be going to Baltimore and DC and Brooklyn, I want it to be clear what this is,
Sure. Yeah.
And then Old Soul Revival is still an original project that I would like to record an album with this year. So that's something I want to get back to. But Steal Your Peach is a fusion of the Almonds and the Dead. And I remember that time was sort of a blur, but I'm sure we did meet
Well,
there.
depending on any individual's drinking habits back then, things can get blurry at certain hours of the evening.
There were always records being played.
But you were
That was a good time.
you came up to me and and
Oh.
after you were explaining the band, you were basically like, "Well, I'm not sure anybody's really ever thought of this before, like having the two just co not concentrating on one band as paying tribute or playing covers, as I like to call it, but concentrating on two bands, and they're your two bands, so it makes perfect sense."
Well, yeah, they are two of my favorites for sure, and I find their, the way they're positioning in the whole scheme of things in terms of the timeline and that they shared the stage and jammed together, a lot of mutual admiration. And musically speaking, their music is derived from a really similar place. And that spoke to me, and I think that their message of bringing people together was very similar too. So it works. It
Yeah,
works.
you do have a very strong respect and like knowledge for what these bands were all about, not just musically. You're always talking to, you're always sending out like lyrics about, like that are pertaining to various current events, like in the Facebook message thread that we have in the band, and you're always looking at the vibes that are trying to be put that the people in those bands tried to put forth, and not just ripping blues solos up and down the neck. You have a
Yeah,
strong
there's some the
appreciation.
folklore's deep. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the folklore, that time and place, the Allman Brothers in the South, the Deep South coming out of the Civil Rights era and playing blues music and having no qualms about it and saying, "Hey, they weren't just playing it. You hear them on the recorder, "Hey, this is a T-Bone Walker song. This is a Muddy Waters song." Like, wow,
Yeah. Yeah,
and
anybody listening, if you ever want to talk like lyrics and meanings of lyrics, especially as it pertains to the Allman Brothers band, nobody should hesitate to approach Mark or our other guitar player, Jimmy McGuigan. He has a relatively equal amount of knowledge in regards to the Allman Brothers,
we're a bit of, yeah,
and it's
Allmaniacs,
pretty
so to speak,
crazy,
yeah.
it to me, to be on the receiving end of it, but you guys are a wealth of knowledge, which I think everybody's really benefited from in the band.
Well, in the bigger picture, I think that, the storyline of American music is something to be proud of, I mean, obviously we both play it. What makes it different? The syncopation is a big part of it,
Yeah, syncopation, the use of psychedelics.
In the 60s and 70s, for sure, especially
Yeah,
with the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers. But,
selected members of Steal Your Peach on various special occasion concerts. I don't know what I'm talking about.
well, I mean, it's all about channeling back to a certain time and place. But, that's funny. It is when that happens. That was the most recent one I share with the band, actually, since we're playing the Watkins Glen Summer Jam. It is worth a short story, but Butch Trucks, who it was, the reason it was posted on Facebook was just the anniversary of his tragic passing, and it was at the Big House, which was the house that the Allman Brothers all lived in together in Macon, Georgia. And Butch is talking about how Owsley was always dosing people, and you had to really watch out if you didn't want to be dosed with LSD by Owsley Stanley. So He was watching out. However, something still slipped into, I think, like a tub of like ice with beer, you know, where Owsley just put an insane amount. So every beer he touched. So he was about to play his drum solo, and he said his drum kit was just taking off. And he handed his drumstick to, he looked at Billy Kreutzmann, and Billy looked like Jesus, he said, with a halo over his head. And he handed him the drumsticks, and he's like, here, you play. And so a lot of, maybe all of that Watkins Glen drum solo is Billy and J-Mo.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah. I had no idea.
Well, I could see how that could happen, because I can't do it. I can't do it when I'm that high. You know, it's not good.
Yeah, well, you know.
However, I will say, now that we have, you know, delved into that conversation, that I do, I am happy to see, you know, in the medical field, how it's being used to treat mental illness. And part of what I want to delve into in this show in general, because of my passion for music and how it's helped me in a therapeutic way, is like music and talking to my guests about how maybe it's helped you through, you know, different hard times, you know, the mental health benefits of music. It's a big question. I mean, have you ever, you know, is that something like, do you think that's kind of what drew you to music?
You know, I don't think that's what drew me to music. What I can say is that playing music and interacting with people musically, either in public or not in public, it's kind of like oxygen to me. I don't know how I would be able to achieve the, I'm no Dalai Lama or anything like that. I'm just a guy trying to get through in life, but there's no way I'd be able to achieve even the level of homeostasis I'm at right now without regularly playing music. It does wonders for my well-being. I used to be, you know, like a relatively depressed guy in my teenage years. And I think that I would have been actually much worse off if I had not been playing music at that time. I think that definitely saved my life, gave me purpose, gave me stuff to look forward to, stuff to prepare for, stuff to feel productive about. And I still feel that way. And it's crazy because it's like a way. Music's crazy, man. It's like a service to provide. It's a way, if you're, you know, lucky and you play your cards right, to like make a certain amount of money, I guess. But it's like, it's also a pastime. You know, it's like something that people do for fun. And learning about the balance of those things in playing music throughout life has been a really interesting journey so far. I mean, you know, I hope to keep journeying.
Totally, man. I get it. That's what the storyline and the folklore for me is almost as interesting as the music itself. Not quite, but I mean, obviously it's an important piece.
Well, you're the main character of your own story, right?
That's a good point.
Yeah, so
fair point.
Yeah.
And you know, it's fair to say that, you know, like, look, as musicians, I think we've both seen. You know, you see the signs of the times, you see like what direction live music and just music in general is going in. What makes these times a little different is because there's always like a new genre and what's the new music. But what's different now is I feel like live music played by any genre on instruments is starting to become a thing of the past in a lot of cases. And I think that's really tragic.
I agree with you. I think that a lot, it's not as much of a thing as it used to be, you know, a while ago, but I think it's coming back. Uh-huh. From what I understand, guitar sales are up.
Okay.
And I see actual instruments being like portrayed in media, and I hear, you know, hear it in some music coming out these days more often, and I don't know. Maybe we're on an up. Maybe we're on our way on an uptrend. Maybe. I would hope.
Right. That's all I'm saying is, like, it's typical for, as the generation gets older, for them to hear the new stuff, like, yeah. But it's like almost like there isn't that much news. I mean, it's not, there is news, I shouldn't say. But I really, what I'm touching on is, like, just to see electronic music supersede music played on instruments is not something I want to see happen.
Sure, yeah. I'm not a big fan of paying money to see somebody press play on a deck. That's not my thing either. So I hear you.
That's hopefully shows like this.
Not to disparage anybody who wants to go pay money to see somebody press play on a deck. Go for it. I say.
I suppose,
Yeah, sure. Why
pitch,
not?
weddings
Take money away from our ticket sales.
and plus, it's just there's so many different issues, and we were in such a difficult time in America. I just feel like that's such a point of pride in America, American music, the history, not only blues, but bluegrass, it's jazz. It's something special, right? Am I wrong?
Oh, it absolutely is something special.
Man,
It's pretty
it's
unique. It's a
revered around the
pre it's
world.
I was just about to say it's revered around the world. Your the way that you describe that is those reasons are sort of like the thing that's driving like the zeal for consuming American music abroad. Like live American music, over in Europe, people love that stuff because Americans know how to rock out. And we know how to jazz out, and we know how to bluegrass out
It's
more so than people who. Well, the way that it was described to me once by somebody that I worked with who lives in Europe is that it's Americans playing music have a different thing going than people abroad, people who don't live in America, who aren't from America, playing the same type of music. And he thinks it's basically because if you don't have a gig and you're a European musician, you can get unemployment. So apparently Americans are hungrier.
interesting. Even in music that exists, that's kind of sad actually. But the reality is, and what the major difference is, and why there was a British blues explosion is because it blew their minds that there was this offbeat, right? Instead of one and two and three. No, I explain this to people and they're like, because I know basic music theory. I do understand all modes come from the major scale, and I use Mixolydian, the blues scale, but I'm not a deep, but I understand that. The offbeat. Instead of one and two and three and four and like centuries of classical music, all of a sudden we have this one and a two and a three, and that's really at the root of it all, right?
I mean that, and the influence of African music, which influenced the American music, which then caused this British
Well, because those guys,
explosion
they
invasion.
didn't have the same issues over here in terms of racism, I guess, and segregation and things like that. And they just heard the music and they loved the music. But anyway, yeah, that is a tool. So, what do you think it was that inspired you to play to begin with?
Well, my mom, I was 5 years old, and my mom was like, "You're gonna take piano lessons now."
Is that right?
That's how it started.
Got
Yeah,
it,
I,
got
it,
it.
it wasn't there. There was a piano in my house when growing up, the same piano still that you ate Thanksgiving dinner in the same room as that piano that I learned how to play piano on this year, last year, and
She
I don't
felt
know.
it would just help your brain develop.
Well, my mom was a third grade teacher for decades in Lower Merion School District. And so she knows about little minds and how minds develop. And so she knows she's a great mom. And so she knows what's good for me. She knew what was good for me. And so she started me on lessons with the music teacher at the school that she taught at. And so I assume she was getting something that resembled a deal, but either way, I remember a lot of the early lessons like very, very distinctly. I definitely remember all of my initial lessons from when I was learning how to read music. So it really, I don't think anything really inspired me. I just I discovered that I had something that resembles an aptitude in regards to music.
Got it.
I was picking it up
And
pretty
you were
quickly.
sold on the keys as your primary instrument.
Well, I was, but then in growing up in Lower Merion School District, as many of us did you go to Lower? As many of us did in this room, I was offered a chance to learn like a band or orchestral instrument in 4th grade, and I chose trumpet, and I got really serious about that. So I was, as serious as a fourth grader could be about piano. And then I started on trumpet. And a couple years later, my parents were like, why don't you choose one instrument to focus on? And actually, I did not choose piano. I chose trumpet to focus on. And through, you know, through from being in sixth grade until I was about 19 or so, I was only a serious trumpet player. I was not a keyboard player. So no, I did not run with keyboards at all. But then I joined a band, which actually, you mentioned the band there in your notes right there, so I'm gonna transition for you. So I joined a band with some guys that I went to high school with. I was 1 year older than the older guys in the band. And I played trumpet and like a little bit of hand drums, because what do you do if there's no horn part in a song? You play congas. So I tried that for a little bit. And then the keyboard player in that band left and there was a void. And so I started playing keyboards again. And that guy who left the band went up to New York to become like a Grammy award-winning recording engineer.
Wow.
So the band is called The Breaks, yep. Like on a car. Mm-hmm. The guy who left is called, his name is Ben Kane. He worked on that D'Angelo record, Black Messiah, which really is a mind-blowing record. And yeah, I just kind of played keyboards from then on and a little bit of trumpet here and there now. And I toured around the country with The Breaks for a while.
Good times.
7 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, despite the fact, no matter how much we want it to be true, real life does not, like, go on pause when you're on tour. So it's like life, right? It's like good times, but also some...
getting sick of each
other. I want to instinctively say a bad word, but this seems like such a wholesome location. But I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It's fucking crazy times, too. You know what I mean? So, you know, you take the good with the bad and you learn lessons.
Yeah.
You got to learn lessons, especially when you're on the road. Oh, man.
What were some of your favorite venues you guys played back then?
Favorite? Well, we played First Avenue once in Minneapolis, you know, which was in Purple Rain.
That's my hometown.
Oh, okay. Nice. I love the Midwest. There was another place in, I want to say, where's Marquette University? That's Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think that's right.
There was a place there called like the Old Eagles Club, which was a crazy venue. It was like three floors, and it was like a small venue and like a larger venue and like a much larger venue up top. And that place was fascinating because it was like, it used to be like the building for... like a secret society, and there was like all kinds of like hidden passages and stuff like that. And there's also another, there's like an old Masonic temple in Pensacola, Florida called Vinyl. That has the same kind of a thing where it's like a creepy kind of a building. I don't know, I'm a fan of these old weird buildings. I think that old weird buildings getting repurposed as venues is fascinating. And that happens a lot in like smaller towns in the middle of the country, I guess. I guess it could happen everywhere. I don't want to.
We just played the Newtown Theater.
I don't want to make a blanket statement. I should not make a blanket statement. I just played the Bristol Riverside Theater with somebody else, and I was informed that prior to that entity existing, it used to be an adult movie theater. So, you know, there's all kinds of repurposing.
Absolutely. That's a first. They're usually old movie theaters, I thought. Was there basketball? There we go.
They are usually old movie theaters.
We just sold out the Newtown Theater, which is a fun place. And
oh, yeah, that was so fun. The staff is so enthusiastic there, and the patrons are so enthusiastic there. They have a whole scene that they're fostering, which is cool. I love seeing that kind of stuff.
Newtown is cool. It's like, if it's very, seems like a, you know, kind of a utopian little bubble there. Nice homes everywhere.
Well, you know, they say money doesn't make you happy, but it makes you feel more secure.
Yeah, that's for sure. So when you were delving into trumpet, any influences that you kind of jammed along with? Or not really?
So, like, I was really into the old shit, man. Like, really loved listening to Louis Armstrong, as the connoisseurs would pronounce it. Big Spiderbeck, all the old timey.
Dizzy Gillespie,
A
no.
Dizzy Gillespie I listened to, but I was not enough of a jazz head to think in my mind that one day I was going to be able to sound like how he sounded.
How about Miles?
Well, Miles, I Miles is a funny one, man. Because when you are a student of a brass instrument and you are striving for, especially on my end, I went to school for classical music. So you're striving on, I'm striving on my end for like immaculate intonation and the fullest tone that one could gather from their insides. And then, you learn about Miles Davis and how he played trumpet kind of like this down here. That's kind of the opposite of my hand motion that I just made, so as a music appreciator, I mean, Miles is totally unique and second to none in his field, obviously. But when I was younger and I was like less cool of a music listener, I was not inspired by Miles Davis or influenced so much by Miles Davis. But now I have a great appreciation for him and his output.
Cool.
Dude played crazy trumpet, totally unique.
Yeah, the first album I had of his was Birth of the Cool, and that was,
That's about as tonally perfect as it gets, actually, with him. I love that
and it's
record.
more straight ahead jazz before he went more into the modal style you hear on Kind of Blue.
Well, it's an interesting form of straight ahead jazz because it in he has a it's like what one might identify as a West Coast jazz ensemble behind him, which includes like French horns and stuff like that. It's like stuff that you wouldn't really see so much out here, and it is, and then that it that it that kind of lush instrumentation that he uses on that record kind of like became the standard for what was known as cool jazz, which was West Coast studio jazz. And yeah, that record's actually great. Glad you mentioned that.
It is, but Kind of Blue is the one that really, kind of took me under his spell for sure.
Yeah, that's
Being
definitely his voice on that record, man.
the Prince of Darkness and everything.
There's like a deluxe edition, or there used to, I live in like the mid-90s in my brain, so I was about to say there's like a CD deluxe edition of some record that Miles Davis put out. Obviously, it probably doesn't exist anymore, but there's like outtakes in on like the extra disc, and there's a recording of like the engineer going, "Oh, Freddie Freeloader, take 15." And then you hear this voice, like in the other ear, they pan this voice. He goes, "It's take 16. What difference does it make, motherfucker?" And that's Miles for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's candid. I mean, it's like a real glimpse into the recording process.
He was probably pretty frustrated. And who knows if he entered the whole session frustrated. Maybe it was 10 hours later. We'll never know.
He wasn't one to bite his tongue the way I understand it.
Yeah, he just kind of said however he wanted
Yeah.
said it. Whatever he wanted to say, however he wanted to say it, in the voice of Skeletor.
Definitely some truth to that.
Yeah.
So after the breaks came American Babies, is that right?
Yeah, so I was in the breaks for a while, and then I guess there was an amount of time in, our drummer got sick, and he had like a leukemia, and he passed away, and that was awful.
Terrible.
And they named you weren't a band dork, right? Okay, they named a music technology classroom after our drummer, and there's like a plaque up in the school. Very cool, actually. We went to the, there was like a ceremony about it, and it was.
Adam's not speaking to me. He's speaking to Najee Grant, the
Oh, yeah, there's
studio
two
owner.
other people in the room. There's Najee and Mike, and that's who I'm talking to, and I'm not talking to Mark. And so then we messed around with some local drummers. We had we got a touring drummer who we went around with for a bit of time, and then it just kind of, we grew apart and stopped booking shows as the breaks. And yeah, Tom Hamilton came up to me because in the breaks, we opened for Brothers Past a couple times and also the Disco Biscuits a couple times. So we were on the scene, as it were. And Tom was looking for a keyboard player to tour around with for his project American Babies, which was like essentially his like overflow music from Brothers Past, where like Tom's a writing machine. So he had a whole bunch of songs. He would run them by Brothers Past, his old band, his old band. And sometimes they would turn into Brothers Past songs, and other times they would say, "We don't want to play that song," or something along those lines. And eventually, there was enough of a build-up that Tom started another band about it. And that's what American Babies was. And it was not, didn't really sound like Brothers Past at all. It was a little twangy and rockin' and a little bit jammy, but not a whole lot of jammy.
Well, I remember it being like, what could I put it in Americana
Yeah, it
class?
was Americana class. There were a couple songs with the train beat on the snare drum. We opened it up a little bit, jam-wise a little bit. And that was a fun project. Met a lot of cool people who I love, and some of which I keep in touch with still today. Yeah.
Awesome.
Tons of fun.
I remember, I'm pretty sure I caught you guys at the Blockley back then. But
We played at the Blockley.
you toured the country with them too.
Yeah, we went all over. Pretty much. We went all over.
Nice.
Yeah.
You have been one of the more vocal advocates for cannabis use.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Like you've made several podcasts and tried to prove the effects of marijuana are way safer than
There
alcohol,
is a
which
YouTube
there's no
video.
doubt about it.
There's a YouTube video out called, what is it? The Cannabis versus Alcohol Challenge
That's the one I'm
that
thinking of,
I
yes.
made that I was involved in the making of with my old friend N.A. Poe, who is one of the relatively few amount of people who's directly responsible for getting cannabis decriminalized in the city of Philadelphia, and now is an award-winning sandwich shop owner. He gathered together enthusiasts of cannabis and enthusiasts of alcohol at an undisclosed location, and he gave the cannabis enthusiasts their cannabis, and he gave the alcohol enthusiasts their alcohol. And everybody went balls to the wall for like an hour, and everything was recorded. And I mean, listen,
So what was the
so
outcome
the
of that?
outcome was that turns out that if you drink a lot of tequila really quickly, you get violently ill. We learned that. We also learned.
Science, folks.
We also
Science.
learned that if you do dabs of cannabis concentrate oil with reckless abandon for an hour, and you're in a bar that's closed but has windows where the sidewalk is and stuff, well, I personally learned that you get mind-cripplingly paranoid. Because I was in this, like I rarely get paranoid about anything. But usually I consume in like a relatively enclosed and or controlled space. I did not control this space. And so I was really not good for much, just because I was like waiting for a SWAT team to come in.
Were you visualizing? Yeah, I mean, did you?
It was, I got to a point where usually I can make my own fun. I got to a point where I was unable to make my own fun. But we know enough about cannabis. Everybody should know enough about cannabis, Michael, Najee, that even if you feel like you're having something that resembles a medical emergency caused by cannabis, you're probably not. And if you try to go to the emergency room about it, They'll give you like saline solution to make sure you're hydrated, maybe a Valium, and then they'll shut the door behind them and laugh about you and tell their families about you, and like everybody will laugh at you. So
This
don't
is
do
true.
that.
Yes. Don't.
Yeah, you
Don't do that.
just wait it out. You're never you're you'll come back. You're not gonna be gone forever. That's what I would say to a person who would be worried about that, a hypothetical person.
So was it the cannabis consumption that led you to your love of reggae, or was it the other way around?
No, it was basically the other way around. So my history with reggae is that when I was in third grade, my dad got me a Ziggy Marley tape. He got me the album Conscious Party. And
Pretty cool dad.
my dad's pretty cool. Both
Yeah.
of my parents are
Yes,
freaking
they are.
awesome.
They are.
And my dad, especially, has a very like a wide-ranging concert attendance history. He saw a lot of shows in the 60s and 70s and 80s, like at the Spectrum. And the other day he was telling me about how he saw like Bruce Springsteen at like some like coffee shop in New Jersey, before Bruce Springsteen was Bruce Springsteen, like. And
And they played the point. I know that.
yeah, well, but well, my dad went to the Main Point also, but I'm talking about like a smaller.
Even smaller. Whoa.
Yes, my dad was pretty turned on to some good sounding music. He also used to work at Wall to Wall Sound and Video.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah,
with the
which
little
used
blue
to.
sticker, and you're gonna get it replaced for life.
And so I mean I never even occurred to me until right now, but I guess he got a discount probably on that tape. But that's good for music consumers to work at a music retail establishment. Just ask my girlfriend, Lisa Schaefer. But so my dad got me this tape, and I never looked back,
Yeah.
man. That tape,
What was it?
all
Just was it the you know? Because you're not really into lyrics.
it
Was it the
was it
lyrics?
was it was how my fascination with Jamaican music is how all of the instrumental parts fit together. And it was the best way I can describe it. I had a colleague at one point, I can't remember who it was, but they described reggae to me as a ratcheting, lopsided wheel rolling down a hill. And that really resonates with me. And I'm just as completely fascinated at how all of those instrumental parts fit together and what kind of sound that makes. I'm fascinated about that even to this day, right now, as we talk, as I was when I heard that tape for the first time. It's like, as I explained or mentioned before, I have something that resembles like a strong aptitude with music. The way that reggae fits together for me, it defies that. It almost feels to me like an unsolvable puzzle that I'm always getting closer and closer to like solving and figuring out how and why everything fits together to make a human feel the way that they feel when they're listening to that music. But I feel like I'm never gonna get there. And so I'm always striving, always. It's why I keep trying to perfect my craft in that genre.
Wow.
So yeah, man, I had the Ziggy Marley tape, and then in fifth grade, my parents got me. I got a good report card, so they got me Bob Marley Legend on
Sure.
CD, and obviously that just kind
That was my first
of
Bob.
just takes me right on down the path. In seventh grade, which is mid not which would place me in the mid 90s, friends of mine and I started a ska band. Which, puts us right in the crease
I love ska.
for playing ska, American ska in the 90s.
I saw the
And
Skatalites right across the street by Tired Hand.
all
Blew my
right,
mind.
oh, that's pretty
Unbelievable.
cool.
Yeah.
So my old ska band, we opened for the Skatalites once at the Trocadero.
Nice.
We were in ninth grade. Our parents had to drive us to the gig, and it blew my mind,
Yeah.
man. That was the bug, man, playing at the Trocadero at that age,
So
really.
I love reggae, and I did, instantaneously, especially, you know, through Bob's music. And then I got into Bunny Wailer's own music and Peter Tosh, and then eventually Toots.
Oh, yeah, you're a Toots guy.
I love Toots.
Yeah.
Well, seeing him live was really special, and he just had a great voice and a lot of energy. Just so tragic because he went from full-on healthy to, I think, you know, it was COVID, apparently.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting? I never even really thought of this, but Toots kind of has the same kind of thing that you would admire about the Allman Brothers Band, too, and the Grateful Dead, where he would take songs that were not reggae songs,
right,
and he would make them his own.
Yeah, like,
you know,
Country Roads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's cool. There's a common thread right there.
He did some recording with Derek Trucks. I know that.
Yeah, well, he did that one record with it was all guest vocalists. There's some song where it's him and Willie Nelson, and it's like so good. I can't remember the record, but he was on that record that he did where it was like, oh shit, or was that a Willie Nelson record where he had a bunch of guest vocalists? Either or.
Yeah, I know.
You
yeah,
know what I mean.
I'm not sure
you
which one, but I know both albums, I think.
Yeah.
But for me, the music absolutely is what reeled me in. But then, you know, hearing Bob's message, I'm like, man, he's really tapping into some, you know, deep stuff, biblical stuff. I'm like, the guy sounds like a prophet. There's a lot I feel like I can connect with what he's saying. For some reason, even though being so far removed from Jamaica, obviously.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think that, like, see, at the core of reggae, even if it's not being played in the song that you're listening to, mm-hmm. the core of reggae is the Naya Bingi beat, which is boom, 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 boom. And where else do you hear that rhythm, Mark? That's the human heartbeat,
sure.
Right? And so when you have a genre of music that's like built around that sort of resonance, like with human physiology, kind of opens you up. Like, lyrics can have an easier time potentially resonating with you. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I was definitely into reggae for a lot longer than I have been into cannabis. But what really got me into cannabis was that I guess a year after I graduated high school, I joined a band called Axum, which is the name of the ancient capital of Ethiopia. And Axum was me and my buddy Dave, who also went to Lower Marion High School, and we would drive to rehearsal at a reggae record we rehearsed in the basement of a reggae record store on North Broad, like just south of Einstein Medical Center, with these like six Jamaican people who are from Jamaica, not, you know, children of Jamaicans. And that is where I really learned about like the organization of the instrumentation of reggae, like firsthand. And that is also where I really learned how to smoke huge joints to my face.
Well, that's a way to do it, and I get that. But no, it's just that whole tie-in with, you know, the whole concept of music and lifting people up like a joyful noise that came out of gospel music and blues and reggae, and it's a spiritual thing, man.
Well, there's something going on. You know, I'm not a big decider on spirituality so much, but I can say that there's something going on with music that has an effect, like I said, physiologically on people. You know, I used to play in a gospel band with a choir, and within the first couple months, I remember sitting at a rehearsal. We rehearsed at this church in Norristown. It was a Hebrew Pentecostal church, and which is an interesting sect as it is, because they're kind of like Jews, kind of. The bass player ripped something on bass, and what he played made me stand up involuntarily. Like my brain wasn't like, it's time to stand up.
Right.
I heard this line, and I was like, you know, and that's what I understood. Or at least that is what helped me get to a point of closer understanding of, you know, for like what people feel in churches where people are super passionate, you know, like it's the cadence and the rhythm of all of these things, you know, I don't know whether or not it's the Lord, but what I do know is that this stuff has an effect on people, and it like really drives them in a direction that like is like positive and causes good reactions, and we need more of that kind of stuff in the world.
Just lifting the spirits, going in with maybe some heavy things on the mind and being able to cleanse that away somehow by the music. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and we definitely should not weaponize bass playing, right? Like, we should not come up with any bass riffs that, like, make people want to go out and do bad things. We just have bass riffs that make people want to stand up and say, what the heck bass riff was that?
So, no, we should not do that, sure.
Yeah. I'm against that.
In closing, man, I appreciate you coming in. That hour went by pretty quick.
Hey, thanks for having me. I hope I didn't ramble too much.
No, I want to give you is Sanoche is your reggae band, right?
Oh, yeah. I play in a reggae trio called Sanoche with my non-blood brothers, Madison and Wesley Rast. I've been playing with Wesley for basically 20 years now at this point. And it's a super fun little band that I play in with them. We're playing. Can I push a date or two or three or four?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So Sanoche is playing at Heritage on February 9th, which is a Thursday in the evening, and also we're playing at Time on February 15th, the next week.
Good clubs.
Good clubs, and it's good vibes for a trio. You know, it's like nice and small, but we can like really let it rip once the crowd comes in and things start bumping.
Yeah. Both places are great for live music, Heritage and Time. So yeah, I mean, we're getting down to the end of the video here. I don't know what I'm looking at Facebook, and I should be looking straight ahead.
Well, nobody else should ever forget again about our Brooklyn Bowl Philly date that we have.
No, they should.
This Friday. What's the date on
dinner.
That?
The food's pretty good. The bowling's awesome. It's going to be a great time. Spread the word and come on out. Next week's guest is Michael Morrow. Pure Jerry.
Oh, I just met him for the first time at the Derek Dorsey thing. Oh. And I had only heard great things. And then I met him. He was super nice. And the band sounded great.
They did. They did. I'm excited about that one. So, Tony Flagiello, I hope you're feeling better. And we'll get you back on some point down the road. Thank you, Najee, Daydream Creative Studio here in Ardmore. And that's it for episode 4 of Mainline Beyond with Mark Singer. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Well, that concludes episode 4 of The Mainline and Beyond with Mark Singer. Really hope you enjoyed the show. Next week's guest is Michael Morrow of Pure Jerry and More. And we're coming at you every Monday, 7 p.m. from the Facebook Live page, The Mainline and Beyond with Mark Singer. Then audio will follow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts within the next few days. Looking forward to next week's podcast again with Michael Morrow, and we'll see you next time.